All right. Well, as Robert said, we're in the second week of 4-week study here on, and for those who weren't here last week, we're looking at individuals who maybe aren't as well known in the Bible. We're probably going to mostly spend our time in the Old Testament, and the common thread with these individuals, they're not really good character individuals, but we're going to look to see what good lesson can we learn from those individuals. So last week, as a reminder, we looked at Nabal, and so this week we're going to look at an individual. Go ahead and open your Bibles to 1 Samuel chapter 1. We're going to stay in 1 Samuel. In 1 Samuel chapter 1, we were introduced to a man named Elkanah. You may not remember that name. You may not ring any bells. Elkanah has two wives. Elkanah, one of his wives' name is Pinnah. You may not know that name, but I am sure you know his second wife. Does anyone know who his second wife was? All right, Hannah. And by all accounts, Elkanah was a godly man. We can deduce that because every year, Elkanah and Pinnah and Hannah would make a trip. They traveled every year to Shiloh, and they traveled there to worship God. Does anyone know what was in Shiloh? All right, the tabernacle. And so they would travel every year to worship God and to make sacrifices. And who was the high priest at Shiloh? Okay, Eli. So they made this trip every year, and it seems that between Pinnah and Hannah, it seems that Elkanah maybe had a favorite. Maybe Hannah was his favorite. Why do I say that? Anyone have an idea why maybe Hannah was his favorite? All right, I'm hearing it. I'm sorry, I can't see who's saying it. Double portions. All right, there it is. Double portions. Double portions of what? For what? The sacrifice. Okay, so they would go to Shiloh to make their sacrifices, and Elkanah would give Hannah a double portion of sacrifices. Well, guess who that did not make very happy? Pinnah. All right, this guy needed some marriage counseling. All right, so she got pretty upset by that. In fact, the Bible refers to her as Hannah's what? Rival. And so she kind of tortures Hannah, makes fun of her, causes her to cry. She gets pretty upset, and she tortures her and makes fun of her for what reason? Because she can't have any children. She's barren. And this upsets her. She cries about it, and she does what? What does she do because she's so upset? She prays to God, and what's her prayer? Give me a son, and I will what? Give him back to you. And so she prays to God, please give me a son, I'll give him back to you. And who sees her praying, by the way?
Eli.
And what does Eli think is wrong with her? Why? All right, she's not saying anything. Her lips are moving, but nothing's coming out. All right. What does God do? Answers her prayer. She's given a son, and who is that son? All right. And so she has a son, Samuel. Once Samuel is weaned, it says in verse 24, she does, in fact, give the son to God. And who does she give the son to? Eli. And so she gives the son to Eli. And we learn that the child, it says in verse 11 of chapter 2, child is ministered to the Lord before the Eli the priest. And we learn that in chapter 2, verse 18, it says, Samuel ministered before the Lord. If you go and look in chapter 2, verse 26, it says, and the child Samuel grew in stature and in favor before the Lord and men. That had to be tough for Hannah, giving up her son. Does God just forget about her? What does God do? She gets some more kids. How many children does she end up having? Does anyone remember? All right. So in verse 21, it says she conceived and bore three sons and two daughters. Okay. When Elkanah and before we go there, Eli. So Eli is now in charge of Samuel. What do we know about Eli at this point in his life? Was he a spring chicken?
No.
All right. What do we know? He's old. In fact, how does the Bible describe him in verse 22 of chapter 2? Very old. All right. In chapter 3, I think it's verse 2 or verse 3, somewhere around there. What else do we learn about him? He didn't take care of his sons. We'll get to that in a moment. Trouble seeing. Yeah, like not at all. Right? Very old, very hard for him to see. In fact, there's a question of, was he actually ever, at this point in his life, really performing duties as the high priest? And so when Elkanah and Pinnah and Hannah, when they were traveling to Shiloh, there's a question of whether or not Eli was actually performing priestly duties. So who was taking their offerings and performing the sacrifices at that point?
Samuel.
Not Samuel. Son, Eli's sons. And so in chapter 1 of verse 3, we're introduced to who those two fellows were. Who were they? Hophni and Phinehas. And those are the subjects of our lessons tonight. Okay? What do we know about Hophni and Phinehas? They were evil. Chapter 2, verse 12, how are they described? They weren't serving God correctly. How are they described?
Corrupt.
Okay. They're described in verse 12 as being corrupt. Does anyone have a different word? What? Worthless. Anyone have a different word? Is that ESV? Or? New, okay. Anyone have a different word other than worthless? I'm sorry? Okay, sons of Belial, yep. Anyone else? They did not know the Lord. We'll come back to that in a moment. Okay. Worthless. Any other? Wicked. Any other references? I'm sorry? Fornicators. All right, we'll come back. We'll come to that in a moment. Yes, ma'am. I think the NIV, does anyone have the NIV? What does it say? Wicked. Okay. I think some versions say scoundrels. Does anyone remember last week, Nabal, how Abigail referred to him as?
No good.
No good? What? Scoundrel?
Yeah.
Wicked? This was not by design. It's interesting that it was a similar reference. All right, so look, corrupt, wicked, scoundrels, worthless. All right. And it says they did not go know God. Well, wait a second. They're priests. People are bringing them their offerings. They're making the sacrifice. I mean, certainly they're performing priestly duties. They knew God. What does that phrase mean? Okay. No regard, no respect. Anyone have any other phrase instead of did not know God? No respect, no understanding? What's that mean? They didn't what? Okay. All right. So we're going to look at, some of you have referenced some of the things they were doing. We're going to talk about some of the things they did on how they weren't obeying God. Yes, they were priests, but they didn't respect God. They weren't following what God expected of them. Before we get into it, though, we have to spend just a moment talking about what the responsibilities were of the priests, particularly around a specific offering. So if you look at verse 13 or verse 15, some of you may have references in your Bible or a cross-reference in your Bible to other verses. Do any of you have a cross-reference to a passage in Leviticus?
7:29-30.
Okay. All right. Leviticus 7, is that what most of you see? All right. So because of our time constraints, we're not going to go back and read it, but I'd encourage you to go back and read it. But I want to summarize for you at a high level Leviticus 7. And Leviticus 7 talks about the way the what it's referred to as the peace offering was supposed to work, and how the worshiper and what the priests were supposed to do for the peace offering. It's one of the offerings that is laid out in Leviticus chapter 7, but you should go read it. You should go read it this week. So in the peace offering, or what's sometimes referred to as the fellowship offering, okay, the worshiper and it's similar to the burnt offering. The worshiper would go and select an animal. It was either a bull, a cow, a lamb, or a goat. They would select that from the herd. It had to be an unblemished animal. It could be a male or female, and they would bring that animal to the priest. And they wouldn't give it to the priest. Instead, they would actually kill the animal, but the priest would collect the blood from that animal. And they would throw the blood onto the altar. And it represented the peace offering to God. And then it's very specific about what parts of the animal went to what group, okay? So the fat part of the animal was given to God. It was sacrificed to God. And it represented the more fat, it represented the animal was blessed, and so you want to send that, you want to offer that to God. And you can find that in Leviticus chapter 7, verses 22 through 27. Okay, now the priest received part of the animal. They received the breast and the right thigh, and that you can find that in Leviticus chapter 7, verses 29 through 34. And the rest of the animal went to the worshiper. And there was specifications on how many days they had to eat that, and other types of food that would go along with it, but that's how it's laid out. Okay, any questions on that? Okay, all right. So with that background, let's look at chapter 2, verse 12. Now the sons of Eli were corrupt; they did not know the Lord, and the priest's custom with the people was that when any man offered a sacrifice, the priest's servant would come with a three-pronged flesh hook in his hand while the meat was boiling. Then he would thrust it into the pan or kettle or caldron or pot, and the priest would take for himself all that the flesh hook brought up. So they did in Shiloh to all the Israelites who came there. Also, before they burned the fat, the priest's servant would come and say to the man who sacrificed, "Give meat for roasting to the priest, for he will not take boiled meat from you, but raw." And if the man said to him, "They should really burn the fat first, then you may take as much as your heart desires," he would then answer him, "No, but you must give it now, and if not, I will take it by force." Therefore, the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord. Okay, so there's two things that were a problem here. The first one is described in verses 13 and 14. What was it they were doing? in verses 13 and 14.
They weren't offering their tithe.
Okay, so lots of things were going awry here with the way the offering was working, but specifically in verse 13 and 14, what were they doing? With the three-prong flesh hook, what were they doing? All right, they were taking a portion. They were sticking in and taking a portion of what? Whose? Whose was it they were taking? The worshipers. They were taking, all right, all of that belonged to the worshipers. And they were coming in with a three-prong flesh hook and taking it. Okay? Wasn't theirs. As priests, what did they get? Breasts and right thigh. Okay? All right. That's the first problem. Verse 15 and 16 talk about the second problem. What was the second problem? I mean, it's bad enough that they're taking the worshipers' portion. In verse 15 and 16, what was happening? Okay. Whose were they taking in verse 15 and 16? Well, yeah. They're taking the fat portion. They were taking God. They were taking the peace that was supposed to be offered to God. Okay?
And they were taking it before it was cooked.
They were taking it before it was cooked. And what were they telling the servant to tell the people? In verse 16. If you don't just give it to me, I'm going to take it by force. Okay? All right. I want you to think about being an Israelite traveling to the tabernacle to make your offering and having the priest take your portion, and if that's not bad enough, they're taking the portion that you're supposed to offer to God. Now, that sounds pretty bad. But these two guys... It gets worse with these two guys. What else were they doing? They were taking it by force. And it was supposed to go to God. I mean, they were doing everything wrong that you could have done wrong with this sacrifice. But what else were they doing beyond failing to properly discharge their responsibility and help the Israelites with the way they were supposed to worship God with sacrifices? What else was going on? What else were they doing? I'm sorry? They were definitely making a mockery, but what? They're fornicating. All right. So go look at verse 22. Now, Eli was very old. And he heard everything his sons did to all Israel and how they lay with women who assembled at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. So you have women who were working at the tabernacle and they were sleeping with them. Okay? So think about, you travel all this way, the priests are not only making a mess of the sacrifices, but they're also sleeping with the women who are working at the tabernacle. That's what these two individuals were doing. Now, I also want you to think about the way that they were doing these things. Were they going and taking the meat themselves? Were they going in with the three-prong flesh hooks? Who was doing it for? Who was doing it? The servants. So, they have the servants going in and doing their dirty work. Who was basically bullying the Israelites to go get the fat that was supposed to go to God? The servants, right? And so how is it, think about Eli, and what is it Eli says to him? Okay, so Eli says to them in verse 23, "Why do you do such things? I've heard of your evil dealings." And it says, "No, my sons, for it is not a good report that I hear you. You make the Lord's people transgress. If one man sins against another, God will judge him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who will intercede for him? Nevertheless, they did not heed the voice of their father because the Lord," what? "Desired to kill him." Okay. So God then comes to Eli, or man of God comes to Eli, and he has this big speech. And in this big speech, he talks to him, and he says to him, "Hey, basically, I picked your house to essentially be the priest, right? And if you look in verse 28-ish, and I did not choose, I did not give to the house of your father all the offerings of the children of Israel made by fire. Why did you kick at my sacrifice and my offering, which I've commanded in my dwelling place, and honored your sons more than me, to make yourself fat with all the best of the offerings of the Israel, my people?" And so he says to him in verse 31, "Behold, the days are coming that I will cut off your arm and the arm of your father's house, so that there will not be an old man in your house." What does that mean? What do you mean, cut off my arm?
Cut his blessing off, because he didn't discipline his son. He didn't discipline him.
Okay, Eli didn't discipline his sons. But
so that means cut his blessing.
Okay.
Take away all he had promised him.
Take away all that he had promised Eli. What did he promise Eli? What was promised to Eli? Priesthood. Okay. Eli was high priest. His sons were the priests. What's the reference to the arm, though?
Lineage.
When you think of an arm, what do you think of? Strength. Okay. You think of power, you think of influence. What was getting taken away from Eli?
Everything.
Yeah. Everything. And so he goes on to say in verse 33, "All the descendants of your house shall die in the flower of the age. This will be the sign to you that will come upon your two sons of Hophni and Phinehas, and one day they shall die, both of them." Okay, what ends up happening with Hophni and Phinehas? There's a battle, right? Israelites and who? It's Judges and Samuel, so who are the Israelites fighting? Philistines. So there's a big battle, and Hophni and Phinehas go out to the battle, and they take something with them. What do they take with them? Ark of the Covenant. And they lose the Ark of the Covenant, and they die. And news gets back to Eli. And they tell Eli his sons are dead. And then they tell him what? The Ark of the Covenant's captured. And then what happens? He falls back and breaks his neck. Someone else gets told about what happens. Who else gets told? Does anyone remember? Someone else is made aware of Phinehas dying. You know who that is? His wife. This guy's married. I don't know if any of you recall that, but the guy sleeping with women at the tabernacle was married. And so she gives birth, but then dies and names her son Ichabod. Okay. All right. There's a lot we can dissect in this story, and there is a lot we can learn from the story, and I'm curious what your takeaways are of the story, but there's one thing I want you to think about. I want you to think about for a moment that how easy it is for us, and even though we talk about this and talk about not doing this, how easy it is for us to do it, where we can judge people on appearance. And how does God judge? Does he judge on appearance?
No, by the heart.
He judges by the heart. Okay? And I find it interesting that in chapter 1, who judges on appearance? Eli. The high priest judges who on appearance? Hannah. And what do we know about Hannah? What does the Bible tell us about her? By all accounts, a godly woman travels every year to worship God, to sacrifice to God. And she's judged in the midst of doing what? Praying. She's praying. And the high priest says she must be drunk. And she's praying, and she's praying for what? A son to serve God. Isn't that interesting? And then we think about his sons. And his sons, by all account, on appearance, are the two most righteous people in Shiloh. The sons of the high priest, who are there to help you worship and help you with your sacrifices. Right? By all appearance. In charge of the Ark of the Covenant. But what do we really know about them? They still your offering and your offering and your offering and your offering. And if that's not bad enough, they still God's offering. Think about the audacity that they're stealing God's offering. And if that's not bad enough, they're sleeping with the women outside the tabernacle. And every time they do that, and they're using their servants to do all that dirty work, to steal all those offerings. Right? And to strong-arm people who won't let them take God's offering. So I want you to think about, it's not just that they're sinning. They're causing all these other people sin, right? What is it Eli says to them? He says to them, you make, in verse 24, you make the Lord's people transgress. You make the Lord's people sin, right? Think about what Phinehas is doing to his wife, who's apparently pregnant with her son, right? And yet, by appearance, they're the most righteous people, right? And so what's the lesson for us?
Can't go by appearance.
Definitely cannot go by appearance. You definitely can't go by appearance. Definitely can't go by appearance. But maybe if we dig a little deeper, who knew all along what was really going on in Hannah's life and what was really going on in Phinehas and Hophni's life? God. Who can you not trick? So maybe Hophni and Phinehas were tricking some people, but they were definitely not tricking God. And who can we not trick? We may be able to trick some folks at work. We may be able to trick some people outside, but we cannot trick God. And it's important for us to remember that. Okay, what else can we learn from this story? There is a lot we can learn. I wrote down 4 or 5 things. What else do we learn from the story?
Power corrupts.
Power corrupts, absolutely. Right? We see this time and time again, right? Certainly these guys. We'll see it with David later on. What else? What else do we see? Yep.
God don't judge him.
Yeah. So for those who didn't hear, the point was it was the impact it had on the individuals, the way it the way their behavior impacted and turned those people by their actions. And can that happen to us today?
Yes.
Right. Absolutely. It's very hard to convince. It's very hard to convince, you know, someone to want to come here when you're not acting the right way. What else do we learn from this story?
Don't take no from God. Grieves out in their heart.
Yeah.
They got selfish. They want it all.
Yeah. The greed. Yeah, greed. The dangers of greed. Yeah.
What is God is God.
You know? Sure.
What is God? Don't take nothing. If you're God, don't take it. Because you're going to be held responsible. What good is God? It belongs to God.
What about Eli? How does Samuel turn out, by the way? This isn't about Samuel. We haven't spent a lot of time on Samuel, but how does Samuel turn out? Huh? Samuel turns out pretty good. Why does Samuel turn out so good? And Hophni and Phinehas? So bad. Huh? He respected God more. Samuel had trouble with his own sons. That is absolutely true. But is it just luck?
No, God was guiding them.
God was guiding them? He had good parents? Yeah, they definitely good parents. But they turned him over after he was weaned, so. He kind of grew up with Eli. What was it that he just got better in his very old age?
Samuel stayed close to God.
Samuel stays close to God. Not sure we really know, but what do we know about Eli and his sons? You can't get away from God forever. What? So there's a so you can't get away from God forever. In verse 25, it says they did not heed the voice of their father. So why they didn't heed the voice of their father is interesting. But then there's this line that says they didn't heed the voice of their father because the Lord what? He desired to what? So did God just decide he was going to kill him? Like, what does that mean? Does anyone have a different phrase there? What's it mean, God desired to kill him? Like, they didn't have a, like, it was, God decided it was done. There was no option. So I believe in Romans, it talks about that God gave them over. Romans, it talks about God gave them over. And so essentially, they weren't going to listen. They weren't going to change. Nothing was going to alter their behavior, and so they were going to get punished. And so, that's what that phrase means. I don't know why. You know, it's conjecture on our part on why Samuel turned out and Eli's Hophni and Phinehas didn't, so we can sit here and make guesses, but it is very clear his two sons Hophni and Phinehas did not listen to him. It's also pretty clear that whatever he was doing to try to get them to change wasn't working. They're also grown men at that point. Any other thoughts? Yeah. That's right. They had passed that point. Absolutely. It's a great point. Okay. Thank you for your kind attention and comments. We'll see you next Wednesday.